Kalpai.
Kalpai.
Alternation.
Alternation.
Vidyamane api.
Vidyamane api.
Although there is.
Although there is.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
He.
He.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Asantosha.
Asantosha.
Dissatisfaction.
Dissatisfaction.
Hetavaha.
Hetavaha.
Causes.
Causes.
Pumsaha.
Pumsaha.
Of the person.
Of the person.
Mohamrite.
Mohamrite.
Without being illusioned.
Without being illusioned.
Vina.
Vina.
Separated.
Separated.
Yet duke.
Yet duke.
Within this world.
Within this world.
Nityakarma bhagi.
Nityakarma bhagi.
By his own work.
By his own work.
So translation. My dear Dhruva, if you feel that your sense of honor has been insulted, you still have no cause for dissatisfaction. This kind of dissatisfaction is another feature of the illusory energy. Every living entity is controlled by his previous actions, and therefore there are different varieties of life for enjoying or suffering. So purport by his divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. In the Vedas it is said that a living entity is always uncontaminated and unaffected by material association. The living entity gets different types of material bodies because of his previous fruit of actions. If, however, one understands the philosophy that as a spirit, living spirit soul, he has an affinity for neither suffering nor enjoyment, then he is considered to be a liberated person. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, text 54, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna. When one is actually situated on the transcendental platform, he has nothing for which to lament and nothing for which to hanker. Narada Rishi first of all wanted to impress upon Dhruva Maharaj that he was only a child and he should not have been affected by words of insult or honor. And if he were so developed as to understand honor and insult, then this understanding should have been applied in his own life. He should have known that honor and dishonor are both destined only by one's previous actions. Therefore, one should not be sorry or happy under any circumstances. Verse and purport. So, vikalpe vidyamane pihi naya santosha hetavaha pumso mahamrite vina yaloke nija karma bhi. So, omaganata vidandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmiditam yena tasmai shikrave maha. So, being concerned with one's honor and dishonor is actually a symptom of the mode of passion. And we know from the Varnashram system that the Kshatriya is in the mode of passion. The Brahman is in the mode of goodness, and the Vaishya is the mode of mixed modes of ignorance and passion, and the Shudra is in the mode of ignorance. So in the mode of passion, you're very much concerned with reputation. Actually, we see in Indian culture, reputation is actually extremely important, isn't it? So people are concerned, not only because reputation per se, but everybody talks behind everyone else's back about people, isn't it? Which is, Prabhupada didn't like that very much. People talking behind other people's backs. So, but we see an example of this concern with reputation in the Gita. Actually, Krishna informs Arjuna that if he doesn't fight, if he gives up the fight out of cowardice, then everything, Bhagavan, everyone will think he's a light person. In other words, he's just a wimp. I don't know if you have that word here, wimp. Wimp means like, how would you say it? A wuss, or I don't know, wimp, a eunuch. I mean, there's all these different examples or words you can use to explain the concept of that. Like Arjuna previously was Brihanala, and he had to really be a eunuch in the house of Bharat because he was cursed by Urvasi to be a eunuch, and also they were in hiding in the house of Bharat. So this is, for Kshatriya, that's an insult. If you say you are useless, hopeless, weak, that just makes them angrier, right? Just like you see sometimes in the football games, the team will call the opposite team names, right? Has that ever happened? I know in America that happens. You say, yes, usually you can't do this, you can't do that, and it just makes it like, like that, angrier and angrier and more enthusiastic to carry out their activities. Anyway, that's the mode of passion, and of course that desire for profit, adoration, and distinction is what we call subtle sex life. And so really one has to give up that desire for profit, adoration. So profit means to gain something, adoration means to be worshipped, and distinction means you're better than anyone else. So you have to really give that subtle sex desire up if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you remain in this material world. So we find examples of great personalities who did radical things to become detached from reputation. I mean, for example, we have Maharaj Rishabhadev. Like, everybody knows Maharaj Rishabhadev. What did Rishabhadev do? Lord Maharaj Rishabhadev renounced his kingdom. He was the king. Of course, he's an incarnation of Krishna. He was the king and he renounced his kingdom. And then he took this process of Jata Yoga. Jata Yoga means he walked around completely naked, acting like a madman. And it's described that people would pass air in front of him, make fun of him, throw stones at him. And he utilized that process. Of course, he was already detached, being an incarnation of God, but at least showing by example, he utilized that process to show how one should be nirapeksha, or disinterested in praise, or blasphemy, or any of these things as far as one's Krishna consciousness is concerned. And Krishna does send different circumstances for us as a test. Sometimes we're praised, you know, sometimes we're sitting on a big seat and all the disciples are saying how wonderful you are and writing homages. Homages means like the Yaspuja books and things like that. And then sometimes the God brothers are saying how horrible you are. That happens sometimes. And it's, if you're attached or repulsed by either one, then you're developing an arthas. For example, it says by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that if one executes the process of bhakti, that very same process, because one gets profit, adoration, distinction, can be the cause of an arthas. He gives four causes of an arthas. He says sinful activity, pious activity, offenses, obviously, and then finally, bhakti itself, or the process of bhakti where one gets attached to certain aspects, especially getting worshipped. So there's that great danger in the process of bhakti. So basically, Krishna arranges that we have to be subjected to those things. Praise and blasphemy. I mean, that's been my experience. You can change, and if you go, actually nowadays it's even more so, if you go on the internet, you can, and you Google your name, especially if you're a leader in the Hare Krishna movement, you'll find everything that you were supposed to do that you didn't know that you did. You understand? I mean, you'll get accused of everything. Being a murderer, being a homosexual, being a heterosexual. I mean, a robber, a thief, an offender to Prabhupada. I mean, it's really true. You go on the internet, and basically what you first see under Hare Krishna are most of the negative things, right? If you've ever gone on the internet. I mean, ISKCON has to learn how to utilize the internet so that the positive things come up first. Nanda Kishore knows about this, right? What's it called? Optimizing, right? Isn't that the name? Optimizing your website so it comes up first on the search engines. But in any case, so, you know, if I want to read bad things about myself, I just go on the internet. And I find out things that I never knew. about me. Even though I'm with me 24 hours a day, I find out things I never knew. And so, what am I to do? I just say Hare Krishna. And when these things occur, let's say when people criticize whatever, it's just an impetus to further take shelter in Krishna's names. What I do is when things get really heavy in the material world, I just take my little japa beads and chant more japa. I mean, that's my method of dealing with that, the stress from all these things in the world. I mean, other people may have other methods, like taking medicine, anti-depression medicine, or playing a video game, or watching a Bollywood movie, or anything. I mean, like jumping out of an airplane, skydiving. But I just chant. So in other words, Krishna arranges so we become detached from this whole reputation thing. Now, on the other hand, if someone is a preacher, they are concerned with their reputation because their reputation or their preaching is dependent upon how people listen to them, respect them. Because if people don't respect them, they won't listen. Like if everyone thought that I was a whatever, you know, whether I was a killer, murderer, or whatever, and who would come to the Bhagavatam class? So reputation is important from that angle of vision. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed this in his pastimes. I mean, for example, once upon a time, his great devotee, Jagadananda Pandit, came to Lord Chaitanya with some sandalwood oil. Because he had brought it with great difficulty so that Lord Chaitanya could be massaged with sandalwood oil. Because he loved Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyway, so what happened is that Govinda was presented with the sandalwood oil, and Govinda, who was Lord Chaitanya's servant, said, Jagannanda Pandit has sent this for you. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, what am I going to do with this? Because if a sannyasi puts on sandalwood oil and he smells like some dapper gentleman, like you see sometimes the men nowadays, they put on the perfume, they have with his aftershave or something like that, they put on, and everyone will make fun. They will think he's a dari sannyasi. That means a sannyasi who keeps women. And actually you see that in, sometimes in Braj you see, like so-called renunciates who are keeping ladies. So Lord Chaitanya said, no. I will not accept it. And then he was so adamant, that means determined, in his desire not to accept it, that he said to Jagannanda Pandit later on, and Jagannanda Pandit had a temper, he used to get angry. He said to Jagannanda Pandit later on that you should offer the sandalwood oil to Lord Jagannath. And Jagannanda Pandit, getting so angry, said, who told you I have brought this sandalwood oil? And he smashed it on the steps. And all the sandalwood oil, which is worth literally probably thousands of rupees even at that time, was lost. And Jagannanda Pandit, being so angry, he locked himself in his room for several days in a state of depression. Of course, Jagannanda Pandit's relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was one of anger sometimes. Like we were talking about last night, Radharani's relationship with Krishna, she exhibited this man or anger from time to time. So Jagannanda Pandit, and this pleased Lord Chaitanya. So eventually Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed to take prasadam cooked by Jagannanda Pandit. He said, please cook for me. And he ate the prasadam and he said to Jagannanda Pandit that even when you cook in a mood of anger, it tastes very good. That's one pastime. Another pastime is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was offered like some bedding by Jagannanda Pandit. That is like a soft bed. Like that. Of course, nowadays, sannyasis, they all sleep on beds. Although it's one injunction is a sannyasi is not supposed to sleep on beds, so we do anyway. We break the injunctions. So, Prabhupada also slept on a bed. This is just a detail, it's not a principle. it's important to distinguish between details and principles. So, but generally a sannyasi is respected because of his renunciation. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he refused to accept this bedding. Eventually, Govinda had to just like tear some banana leaves and put them inside an old cloth of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's to give him some soft place to lay on. But Lord Chaitanya would say that if one sees even a spot in a white cloth, then people will criticize. So sannyasi's life is like that, or a preacher's life, not only a sannyasi's life, but a preacher's life is like that, that they have to be careful about not causing people to criticize. And another reason is not simply for their preaching, because they're concerned that people will commit offenses against them. I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very concerned when he was a grahastha, people would criticize him for chanting the names of the gopis. He would chant to the names of the gopis and people would criticize him. And he was thinking, I came to free the conditioned souls from this material world, but I'm causing their spiritual demise. I mean, that spiritual death. Because they're criticizing and blaspheming me. So therefore, in order to change that, one of the reasons he took sannyas was so the people would naturally respect him instead of criticize him. Even his own students. This is right. One time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got so angry with a student who was giving him instruction, Lord Chaitanya was running after him with a stick to beat the student. And the student went to the other students and they were criticizing Lord Chaitanya. So I'm giving the opposing view that actually someone who's a preacher should be concerned with reputation. But not for his own sake, but for the sake of others. That's the difference. Whereas for our own sake, we may be subjected to austerity, criticism, and we should just tolerate these things. Tat tenam kam tam, shusha mikshamanam, bunjanabhatma kritam, vipakam. What is that? Vidvag vapurvir, vidadam namaste, jiveta yo mukti, vadeisa dayabhak. That if one is able to tolerate everything that happens, not only praise and blasphemy, but cold and hot, disease and health, and all sorts of dualities in this world, as Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Gita, Dvandva Vimukta Subhadukha Samyar, Gacchantya Muda Padamavyam Tat, that one has to be freed from this attachment to the dvandva, the duality of this world. Summer and winter, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, nice tasting food, bad tasting food. One has to be just freed from these things. Hunger, thirst. And in this way, if one is subject to these things and goes on serving Krishna, according to the Bhagavatam, then he actually gets pure devotional service. So Dayavak. He actually becomes the fitful inheritor for pure devotional service. If he goes on serving Krishna with his mind, body, and words, not just with his body. I mean, it's easy to serve Krishna with your body. And it's easy to serve Krishna with your words, but to actually have your mind fixed on pleasing Krishna in spite of the miseries, that's the hardest thing. That is the hardest thing to do. So if you can do that, you can get pure devotional service very, very easily. Anyway, so Dhruva Maharaj here is a typical Kshatriya. He hasn't yet become a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's very concerned. The Kshatriya blood is very interesting because you actually see genetically people have certain psychophysical natures. It's very interesting. Now, if you go around India, different parts of India, there's actually different psychophysical natures according to the place they go. You go in India. Like if you go, for example, to Punjab, then generally they're fighters, isn't it? I mean, I was staying at one friend's house from Punjab, and there was so much yelling and screaming in the house, and I said, is there some problem? He said, no, this is how we interact normally. And then I said, well, this is love, as far as you're concerned. And then another time, I was in a place where everybody was from Bengal, and they were cooking a feast at 11 o'clock at night. It wasn't a fast, a feasting day. This is a normal day. And my room was right above the kitchen. This is a temple. And there's also yelling, screaming, throwing things around. I ran down to the kitchen. I said, all right, stop fighting. And they said, no, no, we're friends. This is how we express our friendships. So there's different cultural things and there's different genetic things. And of course, nothing happens by accident. We take birth in a certain type of family because of the mentality we had from the previous birth. Just like the air carries aromas, Krishna describes, the subtle body goes to a gross body according to the subtle body's conceptions or the desires from the previous life. So anyway, so this is there. So Dhruva Maharaj had Kshatriya blood, Kshatriya genes, and definitely he wasn't going to take this insult. Another thing we can learn from this is that even if we are in a mode of passion, we can use that to become Krishna conscious. We can engage it in Krishna service, like Arjuna engaged passion in Krishna service. So Dhruva here, he engages his passionate desire for honor, for having a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, to serve Krishna. And eventually, he loses that desire. So that's our point. Whatever desire we have, akama, sarvakama, moksha kama daradi, tivraina bhakti yogena yajetu purushampara, just engage in Krishna's service. And then you'll be purified of it eventually. So anyway, that's all we have to say today. So any questions or comments about anything I said in class? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, disturbances? No? No? No, everybody's sleeping. We should have questions because that indicates we've been listening, isn't it? It's important to read Prabhupada's books. If you read Prabhupada's books and understand his literature and study them, then you'll usually have questions. Like, how can we engage our material desires in Krishna's service? I mean, that's a good question based on what I just said. How do you engage in material desires? I mean, dovetailing is called. Let's say you have a desire for romance. Right? You're a romantic person. You watched a lot of Bollywood movies. Then you get married in a Krishna conscious way and you engage it. It's not that we say everybody has to give up their desires. Prabhupada said, dovetail, do whatever you're doing, but do it for Krishna. Right? And you raise a Krishna conscious family. No problem. No problem there. And so many desires. If you have a desire to study, then you study Krishna conscious literature. If you have a desire to do farming, then you do a farm for Krishna. I mean, that's what Varnashram is all about. And if you have a desire to make money, 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 money is the honey, then you make money for Krishna. There's no problem. Prabhupada said they could take a picture of him pulling in the money. Because there was one Mayavadi, they had a picture, he was pushing away money, showing how detached he was. And Prabhupada said, you can take a picture of me pulling in the money. Because we need it for Krishna. I mean, without money, how can you go on? How are you going to pay the electricity? How are you going to pay the boga? How are you going to do anything? So we need people who want money. We need people who want romance so they can have Krishna conscious children. No problems. Whatever you desire, within reason. I mean, obviously, if you desire to kill people, don't try to engage that in Krishna service. We don't have too much opportunities for that in our Krishna conscious movement right now. Maybe in the future. But we're not terrorists. Yes? We have two questions. Nandakishore and you. Who goes first?
The end result of devotional activities was considered as spiritual.
Yes.
And sometimes also the process has to be spiritual as well. So we have to focus on the goal and just focus on the process.
That's interesting. Prabhupada said in the beginning one gets is attached to their particular activity in devotional service, and at the end they're actually attached to Krishna. So it depends. It really depends upon your status in Krishna consciousness. We always have to be aware of the goal. I mean, if you're driving somewhere, you have to be aware of the destination. Otherwise, you're just going to go around in circles. At the same time, you have to be aware of the process of driving. You know, you need petrol. You have to observe the speed limit. So many things like that. So I think both things have to be there. It's not just the goal. Because let's say you're driving from here to Suva, and you're just aware of getting to Suva, then, and you're not aware of the speed limit, you're going to be stopped many times by the police, right? Or you're going to run out of petrol. So many things can happen. Or you won't accomplish anything. So you have to be aware of both things. Does that answer the question? And as far as, and yes, we should be attached. In the beginning, we can be attached to our activity. We have a right to our service, not to the result of the service. But we can like doing what we're doing. We should be engaged according to our psychophysical nature. Prabhupada said, the business of the spiritual master is to engage the disciple according to the psychophysical nature. Otherwise, if we're not, we'll be forced to act anyway. That's what Krishna says to Arjuna in Gita. When Arjuna wants to renounce everything, Krishna said, if you don't act according to my instructions and fight, you're going to be forced to fight anyway by your nature. What good will repression accomplish? So we should all act according to our nature. Do things we'd like to do for Krishna. I mean, if you're an absolutely pure devotee in the spiritual world, then you're ready to do anything for Krishna. And you have no material nature anyway in the spiritual world. That's a little different. You have your spiritual nature, but still you're ready to do anything for Krishna. So Nanda Kishore, you had a question?
It's very much closely related to what he's saying. On one hand, we say that one should act according to their nature and go to you for Krishna.
Yeah.
But should there be any effort on our part at the same time, simultaneously, to try and
Well, by changing the nature, obviously we should change the demoniac nature for the better. That's true. But I don't think that Krishna recommended that Arjuna change his nature from that of Kshatriya. I mean, he wanted Arjuna to have a higher understanding, obviously. But he didn't want Arjuna to become a Brahmin or a Vaishya or Shudra. I think he wanted Arjuna to act according to his nature, but on the intelligence platform, have a higher nature. Because physiologically or psychophysically, we do have a certain material nature. And my experience is, obviously, until one becomes an absolute pure devotee, that material nature remains there.
So if our ultimate goal is to become a pure devotee, anyway,
yeah,
should we be simultaneously making an effort to do give up these attachments that we have? It's like some people may be very much used to very comfortable living.
Yeah.
And one has to become detached from that.
Yes.
And if they cultivate, if they, on the excuse of saying that I'm doting for Krishna's service.
Yeah, that's a good question.
They start just being in that environment and actually may be attached.
Hmm. That's actually a very, very good question. Of course, it shouldn't be done prematurely. And the detachment has to come about from positive attachment to Krishna, or Krishna's service, or the pleasure of the spiritual master. It's a fine line. If you just concentrate on giving something up, then your heart may become harder. But if you're actually ready for it, and it doesn't disturb you too much. Yes. So I think the standard should be that if it's not completely disturbing to your devotional service, and you're going to be able to continue on that standard of renunciation. Because Prabhupada talks about this in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about Gajendra, the story of Gajendra Mokshana. Gajendra the elephant was fighting in the water and he was losing. And ultimately Krishna had to come and save him. So Prabhupada said, one should be so situated that he can fight Maya. In other words, one's ashram or status or standard of sense gratification one has to use his intelligence not to bring it down to such a level that he becomes weaker. I think that's really the point. So you use your intelligence. Yes, reduce to the minimum what you need, but also what you need psychologically. I mean, I know if it was like the early days when I was in New York and there was no heat in the middle of the winter, and the water, you took a shower in the morning and the water was like freezing temperature. I mean, I don't know if I'd be able to do that at this age. Because the water would come out of the faucet, of the shower head, and it was like needles piercing your skin. I mean, I could do that when I was 21. I could do it, but I hated it. I didn't look forward to taking a shower at all. But if you ask me to do that now when I'm 64, would I be able to do that austerity? I mean, I have to be practical. Would it be too disturbing for my mind? I mean, even Prabhupada, when he took a shower in the morning, he used this, in India, they use this heater, the immersion heater, you know, electric heater, they'd stick in the bucket and heat the water. Prabhupada wasn't taking cold showers. In the morning, they always heated up the water for Prabhupada, even in India. To take a shower. So I think just physically, psychologically, we have to be honest with ourselves, you know, not to do more than necessary, obviously, but not to do less than necessary. You know, there has to be moderation in all these things, yeah.
So in that case, how do you look at an example of sweat? I am sure I was absolutely not inclined to be impatient.
Yeah.
I was literally forced against my nature by my guru to come out of Canada. And I had no inclination, no ability to breathe or anything like that. And I sometimes feel like I was driven against my nature to do what I really didn't want to do.
Right. So, the guru knows how far you can push. We gave that example last night about a devotee who's in the United States right now, and he was here in Fiji before, and Srila Jamal Krishnamurti said to him, he wanted to stay in Fiji, he said, you have to go to the United States and do this preaching, be in the temple, and if you don't do it, you're not my disciple anymore. Pretty heavy, isn't it? I mean, sure. But the guru knows that. That's the guru's perspective. He knows how much austerity he can subject you to without breaking you. I mean, there's a certain point that we break, isn't it? I mean, no, but nobody's going to break by preaching. Nobody breaks by preaching. I mean, for example, I joined the movement and I was extremely shy. Nobody would believe that about me now. I mean, I really didn't know how to talk to people or anything. Of course, that protected me. That also meant I had no girlfriends, which is pretty good. Krishna protected me from that whole scene. So the first day during the movement, the devotee said, "You're going out to distribute books." First day. And I said, "Well, don't you have a better job, like treasurer or something like that?" And they said, "You can be treasurer, but there's no money in the temple." In those days, you know, the total income for the temple was like $10. We didn't have any money to pay the rent. We rented a building. Didn't have any money to pay the rent. So I went on Sankirtan, and they said, "You've got to collect the money to pay the rent. Sell books." And there I was in the middle of the street wearing a dhoti, which is like the most embarrassing thing in America you can imagine, trying to collect money. And then Krishna, we were all in Sankirtan, and then Krishna sent one anonymous gentleman up, and he gave a donation, which was exactly the amount of the rent, like $350 or something like that, and he walked away. He said, "Who was that?" Might have been Krishna, you know. So, you know, we all got forced to do things by Krishna. And I think that's part of advancing in devotional service. And we do have to embrace voluntary austerities, but not too much. I mean, it was a few months ago, I was thinking, Lord Chaitanya slept on the floor, I should also sleep on the floor. So I took it. I told the devotees, get rid of the mattress, get rid of the bed, I'm going to sleep on the floor. And so I tried it and I couldn't sleep. I wasn't very, very good the next day, you know. Next day, bad temper, you know, and tired, and just, you know, wasn't so good. Bruised and everything like from sleeping on the floor. So what can you do? You can't do more than you can do. Although, you know, I have embraced some austerities in diet, and somehow or other I'm able to do that. But I still, Prabhupada said, one time he said, devotees were trying to feed him very bland food. And then Prabhupada said, let the starvation committee go to hell. You know, because Prabhupada said, I need tasty food. So, I mean, there's a... There's someone's mobile phone again. So, I mean, even Prabhupada said that example. Mobile phone. Of course, Lord Chaitanya said about sannyasis, they shouldn't eat opulent food, shouldn't wear fine clothes, shouldn't think of women even in dreams, but they should always think of Krishna in their heart, their hearts. So this is an injunction for, there's different injunctions for different people in different ashrams. However, it's an individual thing. I mean, we know what we need, but not more than that. We need some recreation. Just like the other day, a devotee offered to pay for me to go skydiving. He said, it's recreation. And I said, no. Yeah, some of my disciples, I was arriving at some preaching place, and they said, Gurudev, we want to show you a good time. Let's go skydiving. You know what skydiving is? Where they jump from airplanes. I said, Gurudev, you can do that. We'll go with you. And I was thinking, wow, that would be interesting. I can chant Hare Krishna as I'm flying out of the airplane. But I said, that's too much. I mean, I can take a walk, play a little volleyball sometimes like I used to. And that's skydiving. So you have to understand your limits. And you can push it as you get more advanced. Yeah, you can push it. You can try to do things that you ordinarily wouldn't do. But you have to be careful. There's health to be considered too. Also, as you get older, you may need more rest. You may need more facility. That's just life. Yeah.
Why bhakti is important in this life?
Why is bhakti important in this life? So let's describe what bhakti is. Bhakti means love for Krishna. And one's constitutional position is to love Krishna. So without loving Krishna, we're loving so many other things. We have deshbhakti. You know what deshbhakti is? It means one's attached to their country. Like, actually someone from India is called a deshi. So one's attached to their country. We have family bhakti. Not really. So many things. But these things don't make us happy. Really what we need or want is happiness. So bhakti for Krishna, that is love, unalloyed love for Krishna. That's what the word bhakti means, in fact, not just regular love. It gives us happiness. And that's really what we're looking for. That's why we do anything. Whatever we do to become happy. Right? We eat to become happy. We sleep to become happy. We get married to get happy. Whatever. But if you have love for Krishna, then it's kevalananda kanda. And it's unlimited happiness. It's only happiness. Just like I've been doing bhakti since, actually 1969, I joined the movement in 71, but since 69, and every day it gets better. It doesn't get dry. It's not like chewing the chewed that whatever you do loses its taste after a while. It's like gum. Anyone chew gum that has sugar in it and loses its taste? And you keep chewing it, and there's no more taste to it. So anything like that. Like you get, let's say you get a new car. Right? Like Sanatana has a new car. When he first got it, it was ecstatic, wasn't it? It was just like, wow, this new car has a Bluetooth radio for their phone in it. And just like, he felt like a king of the world when he was driving it the first time. But now it's, do you become happy just by going in your car? No. It's just the car. Right? Any of these things are like that. It's the new factor. You understand the new factor when you first get something? Wow. Or like the ladies, a new sari or a new dress. And then you go to the Priti Bhoj to show it off to all the other ladies. Like that. But then after a while it just stays in your closet. Then you have to get a new one after that. There was one lady who had like 5,000 pairs of shoes. An elder Marcos. You heard about that?
Yeah.
I mean, her closet was as big as this room, shoe closet. So, that's pretty impractical. Then you need like servants just to take care of your shoes. So it's better to be have bhakti, and then you know, then you're just happy inside, whatever happens. Because the material world is such that things will happen. You know, people will die, you're going to get sick, and you're still happy. That's the amazing thing. I've seen devotees leaving their bodies, and people are, the doctors or whoever, are thinking, you know, aren't you unhappy? Aren't you depressed? Aren't you in anxiety? So the devotees say, no, I'm happy. I mean, who else is happy while they're leaving their body? And all of us are going to have to leave our body, right? So that's why we need bhakti now. Not later. Don't wait till you're old. And then you'll always have excuses anyway. Like Prahlad Maharaj says, when you're young, you'll have excuses, I'm just a kid. Then later on, I'm just a teenager. And later on, I've gotten married, so I have to work. And later on, later on, I have to take care of my grandchildren. And later on, I'm retired. Too old for bhakti. So, komar macharet pragyo dharmam bhagavatam nipa. Yeah. Durabham manasajana dharma parapurubhamartha. And you take up bhakti right away. It's so nice. I mean, I've been doing it. And it's nicer every day. I'm so happy to be here to see the deities, be with all of you and take prasadam. And what's nicer? I've given up skydiving. Of course, I never did it. But I gave up so many things. Okay? So I think we have to end because it's almost time for prasadam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.